gonna rock these shades, gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey, gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna scream my name, make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout. Make you
shot of fun. My mama, she done told me I may have lovers who will hold me, but I ain't ever gonna find one. She said you can't find love when you're drifting around. You gotta plant some roots and grow in the ground. You gotta branch on. Friends.
sober light, I feel my shame. The morning bright ignites my pain. On the southern side of a northern campaign, I know there's just me to blame. My actions, I know they don't always show the man I know I am. I'm better than choices misguided by voices telling me virtue be damned. In the sober light I feel my shame. The morning bright ignites my your whisper in the breeze, and I fell on my knees. For in you, I know I'm saved. I'll work on my ways and grow wiser with the days, and repent for just how I behave. In the sober light, I feel my shame. The more ignites my pain. On the southern side of a northern campaign, I know there's just me to blame. Couldn't come back and try. I assumed I was too far gone. But then you turned me round, and what's lost has been found. I guess I was home all along. In the sober light, I feel my shame. The morning bright ignites my pain. On the southern side of a northern campaign, I know there's just me to blame. On the southern side of this northern campaign, I know there's just me to blame. Yes, I know there's just me to blame.
That was Austin Mays from his brand new release, and we got Austin on the line. Hey, Austin, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm hanging in here. Now, this is the first time you've been on our show, and we always like to get things rolling by giving our fans this opportunity to get to know who you are. And the best way to do that is through your journey, how you got to where you are today. So give us the story of Austin Mays.
Sure. I want to start by thanking you for having me here. I'm really excited to be on the show, and I'm really excited to get to connect with your fans. But basically, I've been playing music my whole life. I started out as a kid playing trumpet. Did that for many years. I was first chair All-State in high school, won lots of awards, actually joined the union at 17. I grew up down in Texas City, which is south of Houston. So I joined the Houston local union because I had a gig that you had to have a union card for. So I was 17, and I'll never forget that day. We had taken our standardized test, and my dad came and got me early from school so that we could get to the Union the Union Hall before they closed for the Astros game, which is two blocks down the road. So, you know, I continued playing trumpet, went to college at U of H, not very far. I'd been taking private lessons every Saturday for 4 years there with Jim Austin. And so it was a natural fit for me. And I went and, you know, spent my first couple of years learning about music theory and how chords worked. And was playing away trumpet in the rehearsal rooms at U of H for, you know, 3 to 4 hours a day. And I just kind of got burnt out on it. You know, I didn't really feel, I've always felt a creative drive. I didn't feel like creativity was coming out through the horn, at least not in classical music, because the whole purpose is to be a cook reading reading ingredients. You know, you're not creating recipes. So I went to a concert with my friends. It was Jerry Jeff Walker, who, you know, if your listeners aren't familiar with Jerry Jeff, he's a guy that every Texas kid grows up listening to, you know, and our parents listened to him in the 70s, and then the subsequent generations grew up listening to that. So, of course, I went out to this concert, and I watched him sing, and I thought, man, I wish I could do that. You know, right now, if something doesn't make sense in the world or I want to express myself, would I play the Brandenburg Concerto differently and everybody would get what I'm saying? No, I should write some songs. So very quickly after that pivotal moment, I kind of stopped studying music and changed my major back from musical performance to focus on more general stuff, because I knew that I really wasn't going to want to be a music teacher. And that's really what that program was teaching folks to do. Nothing wrong with that. You know, it's a wonderful school. I just didn't feel like my creativeness would come out from that. So I switched to songwriting. That was probably about, you know, probably about 20 years ago. And I haven't really looked back. But, you know, living in Houston, it's such a spread out city that there's not really much of a chance to connect with other artists locally. You know, you have to drive a long way, and it's kind of hard to, you know, back in the day, we didn't have online forums like Facebook and other social media. So I really didn't feel connected to a music scene, and I dreamed about moving to Austin. Because that's all that people talk about is how Austin's a music capital and musicians live there. And so I moved, you know, I'd set a timer for myself. I was working in Houston at a cubicle job. I set a timer for myself to be like a reminder to be in Austin. And 2 weeks after I moved to Austin, that reminder went off. And I felt like I had accomplished something. So that's what brought me to Austin. You know, and my background was definitely in classical music. I played a little jazz, but I really did not get into other types of music until I picked up the guitar and really started to understand how the songs worked, chord progressions and things like that. You know, being a trumpet player, you're a one note at a time kind of person. So it really forced me to think about that. And then, of course, trying to get words to say what you feel without doing something that's already been done before. You know, so that was a big shift, but coming to Austin, it really helped connect with folks.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this new release. If you were walking down the street and someone came up to you and you had to give them that elevator pitch about what this is about or kind of, you know, sell them on this new release, what would you tell them?
Well, you know, I would tell them that this new release is a very confessional release. So in the past, I've written songs that are about the world and the wrongs that happened to me. And here I like to take more responsibility for my role in all of that. You know, so it's kind of like instead of complaining about things, I acknowledge them as they are and, you know, talk about the changes that either I can make or have made. So, you know, if they want to ask me what it sounds like, well, it's Americana in the sense that it is, there's some jazz on here with some trumpet. There's rock and roll, country, folk. It's all mixed together. And, you know, even a little bit of that classical influence is in there, too, on one of the trumpet pieces. So it's a confessional record that tells a story and a journey, you know, from sort of my dirtbag days to where I am now, which is, you know, I'm a lot happier. I feel like a lot more centered, you know, with my wife and being sober for 4 years now. You know, it's really, I have a better perspective on life than I did when I was a 24-year-old going in and closing down bars every night.
Okay. Now, let's talk about you as a songwriter. You know, obviously this is a big part of who you are as an artist. When you sit down to begin that process, what is your mechanism that gets the juices going?
You know, I think that a lot of times I like to sit around and listen to music in the mornings, especially on weekends, and I'll have lines that come to me, little clever phrases that I want to turn into a song eventually. And so a lot of times I'll sit there with my coffee in the morning on my back porch, listening to music, kind of getting my brain going sonically, you know, and yeah, then I pick up a guitar I read through my notes and kind of things that I've collected over the last few weeks. And then I'll go grab my guitar and start playing on it, you know. And a lot of times practicing leads to songs. So if I'm working on particular guitar techniques and trying to polish up an instrument, I'll often find inspiration in a melody or an idea that can, you know, one of those ideas that's been swimming around in my head jumps on the guitar. So, you know, my process is more like walking up to a big lake and kind of knowing where the fish generally hang out, getting familiar with a few of the bigger ones, seeing them over a few weeks and months. And then finally, one day you reel it in and put it in the net. So, you know, I don't force anything. You know, I just try to let it come in and be receptive to what path the art takes.
Okay. Now, I'm always fascinated about the differences between lyric writing and finding those melodic ideas. Lyrics, I find to be a craft. You know, the more you do it, the better you get at it. It has certain structural elements, like, you know, the story, the continuity, the meter, the rhyme. But melody's a little different. Some songwriters like to work off of a groove and let them freeform. Others look for chord structures, or even given the lyrics and the cadence dictating where the melody should go. What is your go-to when you look for your melodic ideas?
You know, that's one of those questions that's kind of elusive for me, because it comes in a lot of different ways. But mainly it's just a combination of, you know, 30 years of playing instruments and in combos and orchestras and things like that. And I sang in choirs for many years. And so you start to feel where melodies want to go. And of course it's important not to do the same melody that everybody would recognize. But, you know, I tend to think a lot more, like when I'm thinking about the words, the melody comes, and then I fit the chords onto it, if that makes sense. You know, I try to, the melody kind of comes at the same time as the lyrics. And, you know, I don't really deliberately do anything with the melody. It just kind of comes with the rest of it.
Okay. A lot of songwriters have embraced technology as tools in their toolkit, whether it's the cell phone or home recording studio. What are some of the tools that you have found to be indispensable to you as a writer?
The Notes app on my phone is where I take very rough drafts. And then I go to to Master Writer, which is a web-based writing tool that has, you know, different sort of tools like the thesaurus and rhyming dictionaries and word families, phrases that use those words. And I just like to look at a lot of words there, and that kind of gets it flowing. As another tool that I use, obviously the voice memo app on the phone. I just lay down stuff real quick. Especially when I'm in the truck, a lot of my writing comes when I'm driving. I get a lot of ideas where I just turn the radio off and think about things. So recording that and then getting home and being able to hear that again, because I haven't forgotten it and the moment's gone, but I may have forgotten it. So I get to listen to it again. I also use a four track, USB input for my iPad and computer. That allows me to, record demos with separate vocals and instruments and add layers and stuff on top of that. We also, in my band, we do a lot. I play in a side band called the Great American Boxcar Chorus. And we get together and we do multi-camera things where we all take our phone out. We put a couple GoPros up around the studio. And then we record onto GarageBand or, a similar recording platform. And then you can take all those different video clips and synchronize them with the music and put that out. So, but I would say that my most common used ones are the Notes app, the Master Writer, and the voice memos. And I think that that's pretty universal. People get really upset when their voice memos get deleted.
Okay. Now, every songwriter has to put the pen down at some point and allow the song to move on to its next phase of life in production, where you give it to the producer and the musicians and so forth. But you got to get there. What is your quantifier that you use to allow you to determine that point in the song's life where you're ready to move it to that next phase?
It really all comes together playing it, So I've got drafts, and I've got some kind of placeholder lyrics that'll allow me to get through the song, and those placeholders will get filled in. You look at it like making a sculpture, getting in there and sanding things down a little bit finer. But once I've played it live quite a bit, it sort of just becomes a tool, and then we take it into the studio, and it doesn't always end up the way I've played it for years. We go into the studio, and somebody else's ears hear that the rhyme scheme's a little off, or the something like that maybe needs an extra half verse. We did a couple of those things in the studio this time, and the songs are better for it. But what was great is my producer Chris Beal allows me, he makes a suggestion, and then he allows me to go actually rewrite it. He doesn't give me any suggestions on the content. He just tells me what needs to be done, so I can go and still maintain the creative process on the whole song. But yeah, they're ready when I'm ready to go in the studio, and then they're not always ready then. We just fix them on the fly.
Okay. Now, let's talk about going into the studio, because that's the art form in itself, beyond the writing of the song, is creating its identity, its sound, for you as an artist, but also the song. When you get into that environment, what is your process that allows you to capture the sound you're looking for?
Well, the first most important thing is picking the right producer. I went with Chris Beal because not only have I heard him do great work, but we've played a lot of shows together over time, and I see him a lot at the Saxon Pub where I work a couple nights a week. But he had a really good vision, and I realized that after we met for the first time to seriously talk about the record. We talked about wanting to make it a songwriter record that focused on lyrics and content rather than, just riffs and melodies, which, nothing wrong with that. Everyone needs a Coca-Cola. Everyone likes a Coca-Cola every once in a while. It doesn't all have to be healthy. But I really wanted to take some of the material that I'd worked on, it's a little bit deeper, and put it in a songwriter sort of record. And so Chris had the vision of definitely going an Americana route with a variety of different sounds. I've never professed myself to be one genre or another. A mad respect to all the country artists, because I know that I'm not true country or anything like that. I'm very country adjacent. But, you know, having him was the first good choice. And then what we did was we all got to the studio. We didn't have, I sent over demos, rough demos, acoustic of my songs. We sent those to all the players. And then it was me, the bassist, the drummer, Chris, and our engineer, Ron Flint. And so the bass player is a super talented Harmony Kelly. She's been an Austin bass slinger for a while, playing with bands like Bob Schneider and Fastball. And her current summer touring gig is with Kenny Chesney. But we also brought in John Chipman, who's was in the Band of Heathens for a long time, and is a musician that plays with pretty much everybody in Austin. You know, he plays with the Resentments every Sunday at the Saxon. But both of those two were on my first album years and years ago, and so we brought them back because I like the sounds that they're able to get on other projects, and I just love working with them. So we all sat in the control room. You know, Chris is the producer and the lead guitar player. I had my acoustic guitar. We kind of played through the songs a little bit, pulled up the charts that we had made, and talked about them. And everybody in the room, had input, and we had ideas on how the songs wanted to go. You know, me being so close to the songs and having played them so many times over the years, it was good to have Chris with the big, wide, big picture kind of view so that, you know, he could rein it back into something that was more cohesive as a whole. So we would play the song, then we would go in the studio and do three takes of it, just us playing through, just three little runs through, and then we would do the takes. Another three or so takes through the whole song, and we would pick the best parts, you know, comp it together, and everyone would go back in and punch in. But as far as the sound goes, we wanted to make sure that we were, you know, we were looking at the vocals, and we were highlighting those, and that we were putting some texture and differences into all the songs so they didn't all sound the same.
Okay. Now, once you get it recorded, of course, you got to get it out to radio, you got to get it out to press, and you're working with Adam Dawson from Broken Jukebox Media. Tell me about that relationship.
Yeah, well, Adam had worked with a couple of friends of mine. Terry Klein, who is an Americana artist based in Austin, originally from the Boston area, I believe. And he had really good success with getting the music listened to. You know, Terry happened to win some awards and things like that. Jana Pocop is another one. She's an Austin veteran, a longtime working partner with Susan Gibson. Now she's up in New York doing some graduate stuff. School stuff, but she put a record out last year called The Astronaut, and Adam did the work on that as well. So, and I really liked the results that she was getting as far as coverage, and again, people hearing the songs. That's what was the most important to me. So I asked Jana, who she went with, and, you know, I went and looked at the site, or looked him up, and realized that he had worked with so many artists that I know, and it just felt like that was the right move there. You know, with seeing so many people that I respect getting such great results, I wanted the same. And so I went to Adam and reached out to him, and he's been great to work with.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the industry. And, you know, I know in Austin, music is a big deal there, and, you know, everyone is very tuned in to the industry. And I, you know, everyone's conversation is about what's happening with streaming. And, you know, no matter how much we bitch, moan, and complain about it, the fact still remains that the consumer really has embraced streaming as a way to consume music. It's not going
right
away. The problem is that music, or recorded music, has lost its status as a product. You know what I mean? It's now a service. How has that shift in perception by the consumer affected you as an artist?
Well, You know, to be frank, I've never really made a lot of money off of my music as far as selling the CDs. I've always made money by playing shows. I've always made a living doing that. And, you know, I think that right now the music has become commoditized, and it's good and it's bad. Obviously, we need to push for musicians to be able to make living wages easier. You know, they're putting all this time, all these resources and all this effort into getting this music out. And the best that they can hope for at this point is to use it to get better gigs and to get more people to come see them and better opportunities. It's more of a marketing tool, and the CD is like a business card right now. And if, you know, with some changes with some people, you know, with some corporations making less profit or less revenue and getting that out to the musicians, that would allow a lot of us to not have to have day jobs or not have to do so many side hustles just to do what we love.
Well, you know, if you look at the revenue that we've been getting from streaming, we all know that this is not a sustainable business model. You know, you can't continue to ask artists to go into studios, hire musicians, hire engineers, producers, studios, and not even give them the opportunity to break even. That just is not sustainable. We need to change that dynamic. Some of the things that I'm seeing out there that's going towards that change or moving towards the future is hoping to do that. And one of the things, I read this article in Billboard magazine where they stated that of all the billions of dollars that are generated through the music industry, only 12% gets back to the artists. And that's a terrible statistic. We need to change this dynamic. And the problem is there's too many middlemen. Every time there's a hit song, there is a line of people with their hand out, all looking to take a piece of that revenue. We need something different, a different type of structure in the industry. And one of the buzzwords that I'm hearing is decentralizing the music industry. Much like cryptocurrency had promised to decentralize the currency market throughout the world. So there are companies that have utilized this same technology that cryptocurrency uses to create streaming services that are on this blockchain. And what that does is that nobody can own this. It's really more of a direct relationship between the artist and the fan. You have Audius, you have AudioLox, you have Emanate. And these services are promising to pay up to 80% of the incoming revenue back to the artist. And I think as more artists start to realize that there is a better way than Spotify, then they're going to start moving over. And if you really look at the history of the digital revolution, it is littered with companies who everyone said were never going to go away, that are always going to dominate the industry, like Napster, iTunes, and now Spotify. But the truth is that change is inevitable. What do you think of that as a potential future for the industry?
Well, you know, I think that anything that helps, make the relationship between the musicians and creators and the fan base is a good thing. I think that that's that should be the way that it works, that the revenue should be more geared towards the people creating the content, and the folks that are just giving us a place for it. You know, you wouldn't rent out a store in a mall to somebody and take the amount of revenue from them that, you know, from their business that you do here. You know, we're basically all vendors. We're all selling something, and our rent for the space is too high. We don't even have rent for the space. They're taking most of our revenue. And, you know, I'm not an expert on how any of that works, but I think that, you know, as musicians, particularly ones who are driven to stay in the music world and make their living, and they're crafty people. You know, we all wear multiple hats. I work a couple nights at the Saxon. I do trumpet studio work. I play in bands as a trumpet player. I do my solo stuff. I mean, we're all wearing multiple hats and we're getting creative because we are creative by nature. So we'll continue to look for things like that and look for ways to directly connect with fans that make sense for us monetarily. You know, you already see people having subscription sites where fans can connect with them. You know, I know that folks like Bob Schneider make a really good living off of their Patreon pages and things like that. Even then, you've still got somebody in the middle taking a large cut, but it is a little bit more direct with the fans. Other ways are through, you know, just posting, being able to record, you know, a quality recording at your house and put it on the web, on your website, you know, things like that. We're always going to be looking for better ways to do things. And there's always going to be people who look at musicians as paychecks rather than, you know, partners. And that's kind of why I'm always skeptical when people come to me with business. If I don't solicit something or Adam or somebody that I work with doesn't seek something out, I always assume that they're trying to use me to make their money, which is, you know, how business works. But I'm always very skeptical when someone comes to me rather than me going to them.
Yeah, and I agree with you. Believe me, this is one business that is definitely ripe with people willing to take advantage of artists.
That's just opportunists, people that can't do it, want to get their fingerprints on the gun and you know, take credit.
Right. Now, when the pandemic hit, a lot of artists went on the internet and started utilizing social media to stay connected to their fan base. And what has happened over the course of that time is they started to put up content that, you know, showed what happens in their daily lives, their hobbies, things they were doing, their puppies, their chickens, their kittens, their babies, whatever it was. And the fans out there started really absorbing this content. And if you think about it on a sociological aspect, we have been in this world of reality shows for over 30 years. So the fan base that's out there is really acclimated to that kind of content. What are you utilizing and how are you utilizing social media and content to promote your brand and to promote you and your new product?
Yeah, well, that's a great question because it's always a moving target. You know, there's always the new thing and it always goes away or, you know, gets out of favor or the algorithms change. So we're always kind of trying to stay on top of that stuff. I've been making little short videos and putting them on TikTok. I need to be better about that. But that's a short consumable thing that people know that they don't have to dedicate 10 minutes to watch. You know, it's just me talking about the specifics. Another thing I like to do, and, you know, anybody that meets me in person would probably agree that overall I'm a fairly upbeat person. Really, you know, I try to keep it light. I try to make people happy. I try to be happy. And so my content, a lot of times, you know, I post jokes or anytime that we're at a show, I like to talk about how fun the show was or put up, you know, content pictures or little videos from us walking around before or after the show. You know, we went to Americana Fest right before the pandemic. And, you know, we didn't really, it was kind of a break-even trip, you know, with all of the support gigs that we had throughout the Southeast. But, you know, what it really helped us do was get a lot of content. There were pictures of us everywhere. There were experiences that we got to share. There were things we got to talk about. I like to make people laugh and make people smile and kind of not take myself too seriously. So I like to post things like, you know, just little self-deprecating things or, you know, little insights into what I do on a daily basis. And I like to keep it upbeat because really that's a reflection of who I am. You know, I'm not really one to sit around and complain anymore. I try to just look for things that are good.
Okay. Well, you know, I really appreciate you coming on the show. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you. And we're going to give everyone out there a double shot from your new release. You guys are going to love this.
And that's okay. I am on my way. We played big and loud for the hometown crowd just a few nights ago. Tonight we'll sing and play while the strangers sway, and that's okay. I am on my way. I'm on. Today, and that's okay. Us up when we're down. Give up, we refuse. We don't mind paying dues, 'cause you can't unlight this fuse. We'll be right back.
A good road trip ain't measured in miles, but good stories and songs and smiles. Busted wheels and flat tires, smoke circles and campfires, and we get back home. Now the guitar ain't as glamorous as it seems. The drunken nights with barmaids and bad dreams. Tangled sheets and tangled hair, a stack of flapjacks, a cab fare, and we get back home. May we get back home. May we get back home. No matter where all we go, may we always get back home. Out in Mason County's where I see 100 generations ahead of me. Warm friends with open hearts lead the path to new art, and we get back home. May we get back home. May we get back home. Such a winding road trip this has been. I can feel the bright lights moving in. All our sinful nights of vice, forgiven by one sacrifice, so we can get back home. May we get back home. May we get back home. No matter where all we go, may we. May we always get back home. Thank you.
50 shades. Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make you shout.
Whether you're an independent artist or a fan that loves them, makingascene.org is the place for you. For the music fan, we bring you in-depth interviews and CD reviews from artists who are on the cutting edge of original music. For the independent artist, we bring you articles on music business, recording techniques, gear reviews, and interviews with industry professionals that give you real-world information to help you negotiate the new realities in the music industry and give you the tools you need to move your career to the next level. We bring you new content every day. MakingAScene.org is the number one resource for the independent artists and the fans that love them. Head on over and become part of the indie revolution.
Gonna scream my name. Make you shout now, honey. Gonna make.